Welcome to the show about great recommendations and the people who make them. This is What's Good.
Yeah. Call my name, I'll be there any night and any day.
I'm Elijah Soss, and today Esprit Devora tells us what's good. A prolific podcaster. Since 2013, Esprit Devora, also known as The Girl Who Gets It Done, is a force in the Los Angeles tech scene, founder of We Are LA Tech, and championing women in tech globally. She's also a founding member of the Audio Collective, the hybrid live audio creator community. Host of multiple podcasts and one of the first Clubhouse icon faces, Esprit has been featured in Forbes, Entrepreneur, Harper's Bazaar, Inc., and more. She knows the power of audio after producing and publishing over 1,000 podcast episodes and speaking at everything from South by Southwest to USC, Red Bull to CBS. She calls podcasting painting audio. Esprit cares about heart and integrity, not job titles. Welcome.
Yo, why is that bio make me sound really smart? You left out how dorky I am, what a socially awkward nerd I am, how insecure I am, the self-limiting beliefs that I constantly am up against. Like, it left out all of that part.
I think everybody should have footnotes in their bio, and they could just talk about all the things they don't like about themselves. or that they do that just might not be as, you know, publicly interesting.
That's very so funny.
Let's just get this out of the way.
Yeah.
Full disclosure.
Yes.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I think you are one of my longest standing friends, period.
Stop.
Think
Stop.
About it. Okay.
That's
okay.
Such an honor. That is so cool. Stop it. That's so, not possible. Because yeah, we met when you were already an adult.
Well, okay. You do the math.
Okay.
Unless it's going to make both of us feel too old. But we're talking about 16 years, right?
But how about your childhood friends?
Yeah.
Like 5, 6, 7.
You have a bunch of those? I don't have a bunch of those.
I do know some people from elementary school and high school, I think. I mean, I have to, yeah, like my
do you
best
know
friend
them
Nicole.
Like you're connected on Facebook, or do you talk to
no,
them on a regular
like,
basis about like how your life's going?
Well, I don't talk to many on a regular basis about how my life's going, pretty much. And this is why you and I talk all the time. The only thing I think about is business strategy. So, like, I think about business strategy and taking care of
That's
my
not
family.
True.
So I'm like, Eli, I need to talk to you about business stuff. You know, like,
okay. Every time, like, at least that I get to see you in person.
Yeah.
I feel like the first hour of the conversation is you asking me questions about me. That's what you do. You just like, and what about this? And how's this going? And what happened with this? And what about this? I know. It's like, nobody does that though. Nobody. Most people, like when you haven't caught up for a while, they just start talking about themselves and they won't stop until you say, oh, you know what I've been up to? that's how it usually works.
Oh, so no,
that's,
I love
so
hearing
that's
about
what,
you.
That's what you do. And then you throw out some like, okay, here's some business challenges. And then it's like everything else. It's like everything
yeah.
else. I don't think it's just business, right?
I guess. Well, yeah. I mean, okay. So I, in general, I'm not really, like, I'll take my girlfriend, Nicole, for example. Like, she has 2 kids. She's mom. She has got mom life going on. So I feel she's definitely one of my best friends. If I was in trouble right now, she'd be there in 2 seconds. But I don't feel like I'm, I talk about this in therapy, that I don't do small talk. You know what I mean? Like, I don't even like saying hello when I call someone.
Right.
Let's just get into the phone call. Like, why do we have to have
right.
pleasantries?
So, yeah, if I was going to reconnect with somebody from high school, or I
yeah.
mean, I still have some of those connections, or
yeah.
even like in my early 20s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'd probably be like a lot of small talk and then, oh, yeah, and this is what's been going on, because I just don't keep up with those people because, I don't know, time
yeah.
has separated us, geography
yeah.
separated us, interests
yeah.
have separated us. Like, yeah. Yeah,
it's
funny.
Wait, okay. This has nothing to do with your podcast, but I think it's actually really valuable to your podcast listeners, and it's also highly interesting to me. That stupid saying that you are the 5 closest people that are closest to you or whatever. So, you know, it's a saying in business,
right.
and it's like to make a lot of money, you want to have all the baller people in your closest network, whatever. I mean, I don't like it. I don't like it because, like, I have all sorts of friends, and I feel like I'm very lucky that I have do or die friends, meaning, like, they do not give anything about my status, about how much money I have in the bank account. Like, right. These are friends that just, like, love me for just existing, and they're in my five. I mean, I have more than five, and I feel very abundant and lucky because of that, and they're at all different economic levels. And so what do you think? Do you think there's something to that the whole five thing?
Okay. So it came from a study done on apes, and they observed these apes.
I'm already loving it.
They noticed that if they took one ape and moved it around to a collection of other apes, it would start to take on the behaviors and attributes of those other apes.
Yeah.
And just like clinical trials with pharmaceutical drugs, like, they don't always work the same on people that they work on monkeys or mice or rats or whatever. So I don't know how true it is, but I mean, I have heard a lot, especially recently, about people drawing this hard line of, at least on the negative energy side, of if there's people who you tend to find yourself around often who are constantly complaining and just down on everything and very low energy, that if you're trying to do the opposite, you need to just cut that shit right there.
That's different.
As hard as it is, you just got to be
agree with that. Like,
that's going to pull me down.
I agree with that. You don't want people addicted to negativity. That's not what I mean, though. Like, I just mean the wealth thing when it comes to the business thing.
That's silly. I mean, I have heard it in regards to, there are attitudes or even strategies or mental models that maybe help those people get on the road to wealth. And if you want to understand those, then if you spend time around those people, you might absorb some of that stuff.
100%. Right? Yeah.
But is that going to really be prioritized above heart? And is that a good person and somebody I want to hang out with? Absolutely not. Like, who cares? Like,
it just, totally.
And again, it depends, like, what are you trying to optimize for? Like, what's really important to you? Like,
exactly. It's something I started. I mean, I've thought about it a lot for a long time, but I really thought about it when my mom got sick, and one of my best girlfriends was, like, insanely proactive in helping me with hospital related stuff. And I'm just like, this is like life and friendship, and this is what matters. Like, who cares how much money is in either one of our bank accounts? Because this is actual life. And if I had a bunch of, like, clouded inner circle friends, and that's all I had was, like, I'm going to use even the word friends loudly. If I had five people that are clouded, highly successful, but then they couldn't care less about showing up when I really needed them, what's it worth? Like, who cares? I don't know. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Thank you. Welcome to my TED talk. Like,
that's okay. I'm the worst podcast host ever, 'cause I can't keep anything on topic. We're just going to talk about the people that we hang out with. It's about recommendations. You're recommending not hanging around with rich people if you want to be rich, and instead hanging around people who are going to help you with their personal life.
But it's about recommendations. It's about resources. And I think part of that whole recommendation resource ecosystem, and remember to choose the five people that are the wealthiest, smartest, clouded people, because that's who you're going to become. It's like, and to relate that in a funny way to tools, it's like, remember to use Asana for this and Trello for that and da da da. Because if you want to be your most productive, optimized, amazing self, but are you getting anything done? Or are you just trying to figure out how all these tools work all the time?
Right. Productivity masturbation. Yeah.
Did you make that up? That's awesome.
Yes. Yes, I did.
That's funny.
Not proud of it.
I am.
Yeah, I totally agree. But you know what? I think a lot of those things that float around the whole entrepreneur and tech ecosystem is, got to be around the five people that you most want to be like, and you got to do this, and you got to cold plunge and sauna and all that.
Yeah.
I think that so much of that is kind of aimed at this younger, either bailed on college or just got out of college type demographic where, you know, there might be some bigger decisions to be made, like, okay, are my 20s going to be about doing drugs and going to clubs, or am I going to start this business?
Yeah.
It really might make a difference to think very carefully about those five people that you spend your time with, because you're going to have totally different interests as far as what your ambitions are. But I think, like, I mean, we've been doing our thing for a while, you know? And we met very, very early in our entrepreneurial journeys,
both of ours. Yeah. It's you, when I met you, you're still my hero. When I met you, it was like the world was shining and glittering with your skateboard decks on the wall. I'm like, oh my gosh.
By hero,
I have
you mean
business past, royalty.
Past positive associations that you have in your memories.
Just like so
of a simpler time.
It was so cool. Oh my gosh. We were seriously so ahead of our time. And both of us, I mean, I don't know if you had an idea. I had no idea how legendary I was. I mean, I'm not an egotistical person. I'm not even a person to like brag about myself, but it's just fact when I look back that I built one of the first action sports social networks, that I built one of the first social networks at a time when there was no WordPress, there was no quick way to build that kind of stuff. There were like AOL chat rooms or whatever. You know, I mean, it was past AOL chat rooms, but that kind of era still, where you had to build things line by line and truly know a developer, and you didn't even know where to find a developer those days, you know?
We pieced together an e-com cart out of like raw code and you know, random merchant accounts that we had to basically sign personal guarantees in order to like take credit cards online and all sorts of stuff. And I remember too, like the volume of media back then around this topic was so narrow.
Yeah.
I felt like every time I would meet up with you and talk to you, and I'd say like, oh, I found this, or I read this. And you're like, oh yeah, I read that last year, but have you seen this, 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 and this? And I'm like, fucking hell. Like I feel like I'm a year behind. I remember I was like, oh, I just read the 4-Hour Workweek. Have you heard of this Tim Ferriss guy? You're like, oh yeah, I met him. I love my virtual assistant. I have. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like only halfway through the book.
That's funny. I do. When I met Tim Ferriss, he was still trying to grow his career. Like, that's so wild. You know what I mean? Like, but all these people becoming like the future icons. So amazing. Anyway, so grateful for our friendship. I think our friendship is the coolest. I absolutely love our friendship. I like that I could text you at 3 a.m. some random business thing and it won't be weird.
Right. And you also know that my phone's off and I'm not going to see it till the next day. But
yeah.
But then you'll get
off like, at one in the afternoon.
You'll get a text back at like 4:30 a.m.
Yeah.
When most reasonable humans are sleeping. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when is this being published?
I have no idea. But get this. This is going to be the first episode because I thought, how meta would it be to have a podcast about recommendations and the first episode is recommendations for podcasts, right?
Oh, I'm down.
There you go.
I want to share something with you. I'm very excited. You don't know this. I can't say who because I don't know when you're publishing this. I have a feeling you'll pleasure after. I just had my second acquisition, but first acquisition as an advisor.
What?
Very excited. I cannot tell you who. Yeah.
Oh, well.
But I know once this publishes, it will be after that. So I feel good about saying that publicly.
Okay.
But because it will be announced later.
If it publishes at the appropriate time, it'll go in the show notes. And when we hit stop, I'm going to hear all about it. And
it's very exciting. Yeah.
Yeah. So on to your recommendations.
Yes.
And I'm just very personally interested in all this because I put the whole podcasting thing down for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this whole thing called AI happened in between then and now.
Yeah.
And even the tools that I used before I logged back in, and there's all these new features.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh my God, at least people are kind of using the same microphones and stuff, but everything else, there's just so much new stuff. And I feel like you have always been my source in tech to find out like, what is the cool new tool out there? What are people using? And so you gave me such a long list. I'm like, wow, this is already going to be much longer than probably the average
length format. Before you dive into that list, I want to share the one I sent you earlier today, because I'm part of the LinkedIn Podcast Academy, and we just had our mixer yesterday, and quite a few podcasters in the LinkedIn Podcast Academy recommended Opus Clips for repurposing. So that's probably not on your list that I sent you, and I wanted to make sure I sent that. So
what
Opus Clips.
What's Opus Clips? What does it do?
I haven't used it myself yet, but it was just highly recommended, and it's repurposing your I think it's both video and audio interviews into shorter clips for social media, if I understand
it
correctly.
That's kind of exactly what I was asking you about earlier. Yeah. So before we hit record, I was telling you how now every social platform, once I showed interest in AI, it's all it shows me.
Yeah.
And it's these videos of people doing these amazing demos where I'm like, can that even be real? Like, is that real? And one of those demos, I wonder if it was this product.
Oh.
Basically, you would upload your audio and video, the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it would extract what it thought was the most meaningful parts in these little perfectly lengthed clips for social media.
Yeah.
In all the different aspect ratios for all the different channels, and put captions over it and the whole deal, like in seconds.
Yeah.
And you're
done. It's
and
insane. Then,
yeah.
But I want to make sure I have the right URL for you. Opus.pro. OPUS.PRO.
Okay.
And then
checking
allegedly.
That one out for sure.
Allegedly, castmagic.io is pretty amazing. Now, I think they do similar things. Castmagic and Opus Pro. I think both of them take longer content and then make it easier for you to repurpose into shorter content.
Yeah, I think the magic is going to be, I mean, you and I have both spent like probably more hours than we care to admit on video editing, and it is just the most painstaking, arduous thing in the world to like go dig through stuff. And I was pretty amazed at how almost every tool now will basically build out a transcript, and you can remove words from the transcript.
Oh, yeah,
and then remove that clip from the video. And but even Riverside FM is doing it now. Like even the recorders are doing it. Yeah, it's pretty wild. But still, what does that require? It requires me reading an entire transcript, right? But tools like this, if they work the way that we are hoping they work, you just press a button. And we all know with social media, it's kind of throwaway content, right? Like, who cares if it's not perfect? If it really does that and it produces like 20 clips with captions and you can just put them up there, amazing. Like, just shut up and take my money all day long. Like,
I'd
totally sign up.
You know what tool I think people, including me sort of, are sleeping on that I think we should all become masters at that would help us in so many areas of content production is Canva. I'm sure almost everybody listening has heard of or has used Canva. They're like, oh, yeah, no, of course. But like, I think of all of us, very few to none have mastered Canva, like really know how to use it in and out, because Canva has editing. I'm sure a lot of us have used Loom screen recording. Canva has screen recording. Canva has audio insertion. Canva has audio layovers. Canva has AI writers. Canva has so much, so many features. Like, you could insert GIFs if you know how to access the apps area. There's just so many things. And so there's this YouTube channel, I'm going to look it up, that does Canva education. Like they just show you what all the tools are. I think it's called Design for Canva. I'm looking up right now. And it's just, I think that's something as business people, we should all master, is how to use Canva. 100%.
Yeah, I was doing tons of UX and UI work.
Yeah, Design with Canva is the name of the
Design
YouTube
channel.
Design with
Canva. Okay, we're definitely going to make a note for that one. I was,
and they have a social media scheduling tool inside Canva. Like, there's
really? It's gotten Canva used to be the thing that if you didn't know how to use an art program like Photoshop, Sketch, or Figma, you would use Canva because it just had a limited set of features and some templates, and you could kind of get your kid's birthday invitation out really easily, right?
Yeah.
Now, I mean, like they're just even like looking at their background remover, like how flawless it works.
Exactly.
Like
that.
It's crazy. That. It's crazy. That. And it's funny because now people are writing plugins for Figma to do the things in Canva, which is supposed to be the approachable, user-friendly art program.
Totally.
Right?
100%. Yeah. I've seen that. Like, there's things like you can upload, let's say you're creating a podcast and you already have a company and you're not design savvy, you're not these things. You could upload your business logo into Canva. It will tell you what the colors are. It could, I think it even tells you the similar fonts or something like that. And then you could just choose those colors when you're creating your podcast so they match. Like, just absolutely amazing. If you have company fonts, you could upload those fonts into Canva so it's all consistent. It's a phenomenal tool that we should all master as business people and content creators.
Yeah, one of our social media managers had asked, because we did a whole redesign for branding on that Vouch app, and she said, you're the admin, you have to create the new style guide. And I'm like, okay. So I go in Canva, and so the first thing I did is upload our new logo.
Yeah.
And it immediately auto created, like, and this is your color palette, you know, just based on like what I was like, whoa, that took me 3 hours and 5 YouTube videos on Figma to figure out, and you just did it automatically. Yeah. Like, that's kind of incredible. So
Yeah, totally
agree. That's a good one. That's a really, really underutilized tool.
Because you could
create
your Instagram reels in Canva. You could create your TikTok reels in Canva. You could create your Instagram
podcast,
posts in Canva.
Your podcast cover art. Like, there's a thousand templates just for that.
There's a template, the Canva, a free one. If you just Google Canva podcast templates, and I'm sure Eli will link in the show notes as well. And there's tons of cover art templates in Canva, so you don't have to go about trying to figure out how to design your podcast cover art. It's phenomenal.
So cool. Oh man, I know. It's gotten really, really deep. And then you have Swell AI for show notes.
Oh yeah. So there's a great industry professional named Maddie Stout, and he recommends Swell AI. He's an advisor in the company, and apparently that is absolute great AI tool to get your show notes just done. So yeah
I feel like everybody's doing a transcript now, and summaries or note extraction, that's where you get the differences. I got I was trying like four different AI tools for Zoom that after a meeting it would basically summarize the whole meeting, put action items together, all this stuff. Read.ai is the one I'm using right now. But within a week after trialing that, Zoom released their own beta of that tool, right? So I'm like, I'll try both at the same time on meetings, right? Because one's plugin, one's native. Yeah. And then you look side by side, and even though they're technically saying that they're doing the same thing, like the Zoom one was horrible.
Oh, it was.
And the Read.ai one was incredible. So it's like, even with the same features, how those features get expressed, totally, 100%. Totally different. Yeah, yeah.
Another app that my mastermind recommended to me that I've been using, it's called Transcribe app. And I'm looking on my phone. And it is great because you could either do a voice memo on your computer or on your phone. Yes, it's called Transcribe app, just the word transcribe. And so you could have it on your phone, you could have it on your desktop, and or you can record inside the app. And then it transcribes things really, really, really well. It's $100 a year. It's free to $100 a year. And I find it's very useful because you could be driving. Like, let's say you want to write a blog post. Let's say you want to kind of do a recap on your podcast or something like that, but just off the cuff. It's not audio to go professionally onto something. And so it can be, but let's just say it's not. So you're in your car, you're talking, and then it transcribes it, and then you could put the transcription into ChatGPT to clean it up for you as a blog post, and then you put your blog post, but it's authentic because it came from your words.
That's pretty cool. And are you using GPT a lot? ChatGPT?
I use it. I wouldn't say I'm a power user because I just really believe in genuine human-generated content. I do use it in moments where I am doing like administrative work or something. Like, it creates columns for you. It does research for you. So the more that you understand how to use ChatGPT, you could save yourself doing admin work. So I try to use it with some, but I'm not a power user. I don't use it as often as I probably will a few months from now or something.
Have you seen, well, it's probably just me because I'm getting targeted everywhere for AI ads, but have you seen all of these products now that are selling packages of prompts? So basically, you pay like a one-time fee, like $75 or whatever. And it's one of those long scroll pages of it used to be $8.99, but now it's $5.99. But then the timer comes up. But if you buy it now, it's $77. And it gives you like 1,000 prompts, but they're all organized into different categories of what those business tools could yield, right?
Oh, so it's
like,
that's cool.
The best marketing prompts, podcast prompts, all this stuff. And it is, I wonder, like, I'm like, you know what? It looks so scammy. It's probably worth the money. Like, it's probably worth it because I just by accident, I've found stuff where I'm like, oh, that was useful. I got, I went in for just like a wellness checkup at the doctor.
Yeah.
And then got like a $900 invoice, right? Supposed to be covered. Tons of line items of like things that like vaccines I didn't get, like weird codes. And I'm like, this sucks. And then, you know, billing department doesn't respond to you, of course. So I get this patient advocacy email and I write a letter to them. And I'm like, wait a minute. I paste it into GPT-4 and said, make this sound like it came from a law office. And it rewrote it. And I'm like, whoa, I'd be totally scared if I got this letter. Like, it did such a good job. Like, it totally sounded from my attorney. And it worked. Like, it totally
worked.
That's
awesome. Like, so something like that, I think, is a good idea. There's even a book that I was given years and years ago about prompts for Google. I think prompts are powerful. We need to know. That's the thing. Okay. That's the thing about the show that you're having, and everybody listening is going to be hearing a whole bunch of different tools. I don't think you should be utilizing a million different tools. I think you should be choosing a small set of tools and then becoming a power user at those tools. 100%. Or else it'll just become you'll have so many subscriptions. You'll be paying more than you need to. Like something that I've paid for a long time that really upsets me and I'm mad at myself that I haven't canceled is Jasper. That was Jarvis.
I canceled that shit so fast.
That was something else. Like, why do I still pay for this when I just have ChatGPT? I don't get it.
I feel like I need to have
a therapy talk over that one.
I feel like it's just starting to change, but call it for like the last 90 days or so, there've been tons and tons of products that are just like this kind of thin layer over GPT-3 and 4.
That's all
it is, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they do just something a little different or...
You think that's Jasper? No.
I think it was, yeah.
Oh, for a while.
Well, now they're doing all sorts of stuff. They've completely changed all of their features. And I mean, now when I'm like trying to solve a problem, right? And I type in like, how would I do this with an AI tool? Like Jasper just comes up for everything. They're like one of those tools that is now trying to do everything. So
anyway,
where it was just basically writing is a writing tool, right? I mean, that's like all they did.
I think at the end of the day, it's just that it's like utilizing Canva, becoming a power user, utilizing, you know, whatever you use for show notes, like what is the problem that you need to solve? Find, like, you know how Eli's talking about Read AI. What is the problem you need to solve? Test out a few tools, just like you would test out employees. You give an employee a test project you give a candidate a test project. Like when I interview for podcast editors, it's a perfect example. I go to Upwork. I have my lead editor who's worked with me for several years create a project that we have completed in the past. So we know that the end result of the project, and we give them the raw files, all of which we have used. And then we tell like, I may have told like 15 or more different people to edit this. And then I see how they sound different from one another. I see how it is to work with them, how much time they take, how their communication is, et cetera, et cetera. What the price points are to work with them. And then I make a choice, and this is how I found my editors. And then some people weren't the right talent for editors, but they were so highly professional and skilled in other areas, I ended up hiring them for other things. And it's the same thing with tools. You want to do the Zoom versus the Read AI. And then like Eli said, Read AI perform better. You want to test out all the things that you hear about in project management. It might be Trello versus Asana versus Basecamp. It's like, well, which one feels more fluid for your personality type? Which one do you enjoy interacting with? Don't be me. Don't stay subscribed to Jasper when you should have canceled it a year ago.
It's so easy to do. It's what they count on, you know? Oh, it's free for 3 months. Just put in your credit card.
No, you know, and I don't cancel because I'm a founding member of Jasper. So I have like different pricing. That's why.
Okay.
And then so I have this whole like FOMO thing, but I don't use it enough to validate it. That's another thing that it's like giving myself advice. Do a software audit on yourself. And if you're paying for software that you don't use, throw it out like the shirt that you haven't worn for 5 years. Like we all have to be more mindful. I think we're in this hyped up tech culture, gotta have AppSumo purchase kind of thing. And we need to be more mindful about what we're subscribing to.
Are you using Rocket Money?
No. Why do you sound like a podcast ad right now? Are you using Rocket Money? Rocket Money. No 2% interest every year. No, it's Rocket Money. Oh, is that one of those that goes through? It goes through all your credit cards and tells you what to get rid of.
It flags
subscriptions. But you have to pay for it.
No. You have to pay for the fancy version. The basic version, which will do the thing I want the most, which is tell me the shit that I'm subscribed to that I'm not using. It just lines it all up. What you have to pay for is if you want them to unsubscribe on your behalf.
Oh, no,
like
I don't need them to do that.
That's a service they provide.
Yeah.
But the free version will basically, you can just log in after you connect your accounts. It'll be like, you subscribe to all this shit. Do you
How do you know you could trust it, Rocket Money? How do you know it's a reputable company?
How do you know
company?
You can trust any of these guys? I don't know.
No, like, I'm serious. Is Rocket Money like a startup or how do you know that
it's been around for a long time?
Weird?
It was called something else and then it was called Truebill and then it raised a bunch of money and they rebranded to Rocket Money.
Oh, all right. I'm going to look that up after.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's the free version is completely fine and it totally works. I mean, it's the same thing like
and it
Mint,
will find
right? like,
subscriptions even like that are annual subscriptions or something like that that I
monthly.
May not have known.
Like anything.
No, but like if I bought something that's an annual subscription, so I forgot that I bought it like a
totally.
9 months ago.
Yeah. Okay. If it's tied to any recurring payment, it'll flag it and say, hey, are you still using this? And I think when I signed up like right away, I'm like, oh, wow, there's like $300 a month just back. It's crazy.
Jasper, you and I need to break up soon, Jasper.
Yeah, you gotta break up. Gotta have that talk.
Jasper and I need to break up. There's so many. I'm going through my head right now of all the breakups I need to have.
Subscribe to that thing. At the least it gives you a nice little list and then you can just go down. So what I did is I opened two browser panels. There's the list. And then I just started going one by one, unsubscribe, unsubscribe, unsubscribe. Just started getting rid of all of them.
Yeah.
And it felt like cleaning,
a cleansing,
house, you know?
Like,
It felt cleansing. Like dropping off a giant carload of stuff at Goodwill. It was amazing.
Yeah. Like Mailshake. I'm grandfathered into an old pricing of Mailshake and I've never really used it. It's like one of these batch mailers where you could personalize messaging like a lot of people.
Okay. Like just like an email automation campaign manager.
Yeah.
Like a MailChimp. Okay.
Right. No, not newsletters though. Like personal emails. But the thing is like, I don't believe in batch mailing people. So I never use it, but I'm grandfathered into like, yeah. So I like actually message people authentically and I'm mad at myself but I'm grandfathered into like, and they've raised their rates like times three since. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't cancel because I have like a rate from years ago, but I don't use
That's
the thing.
Brutal. Our CRM did that. Our CRM went from this is what it's going to cost per user per month, right?
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden it flipped to annual. And then all of a sudden it changed to if you add a user, you can't take them off because you just paid for the year. And I'm like,
wow.
Oh my God. Now I got to wait like 11 months until I can get rid of this thing.
Which
because
CRM
now
is
I just,
this?
It's Copper CRM.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me Pipe Drive. I have Pipe
No,
Drive.
I see. Do you like Pipe Drive?
I mean, I can't give you an educated answer. I like Pipedrive because it's an Estonian company, so I don't have like a good reason to like Pipedrive.
Okay.
I don't really use it. So I have it. I do put all the my assistant puts all the contacts in. I'm like an evangelist.
I've been on so many, like all of them probably, you know.
Yeah, you have.
Salesforce with years back. And we were on HubSpot before Copper. I felt like HubSpot got too bloated and expensive and complex for what we needed it for.
Yeah.
And so then we went to Copper because I thought it was a little more streamlined. But I feel like the conversation when you ask somebody about CRMs should just be like, hey, what CRM do you hate the least? Because Like everybody yeah. hates them.
Well, no, I don't hate Pipe Drive. I think Pipe Drive is pretty great, but I don't use it to, I don't use all the feature. I just use it kind of like a Rolodex.
I feel like somebody in the industry stood up and said, hey guys, this is just going to be really expensive. So let's all agree. All yeah. of us, like no matter what, no, or what features we have, this is going to be really expensive.
$9 a month.
$9 per user per month, like per seat?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. That's insane.
Like insane high?
No, insane low. Like we're paying, oh, I don't even want to say. I mean, a couple hundred per person per month.
Wait,
like,
what? Wait, yeah. per month? Yeah. What but, are you even but, talking
but,
about?
But all wrapped up into 1 year. So it's like thousands per year. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever. Anyways, it sounds like start, you let's need move on rock, before I start, rocket money before more I start, than before I start. Rocket crying. Reach more yeah. than I do.
Yeah, totally, totally. Well, you brought up editing, and I'm super curious about that, like this whole thing about finding editors and editing stuff. Do you feel like any of these tools, or have you no. seen anything that's out of place?
Here's the thing. Here's the terms that I use. I say there's and ah editors, and then there's story producers. And if you want to have a real podcast, you have a story. There's three different kinds of editing. No editing. You just trim the front and back or something like that. That's fine. Right. But then you need really high pre-production. And that's totally fine to have no editing. If you're going to have editing, understand whether you're having and ah editing or you're having story production. I think real podcasters, like if you're truly trying to have a professional production that's like on the respectability of like Joe Rogan or Call Her Daddy or these kinds of things, like that's the lane that I'm in, then you want to have story production editing. Like you don't want to just do ums and ahs, and sometimes it doesn't sound natural to take out. Loom created an and ah air removal.
I saw
and
that.
I clicked it by accident and it messed up my video and I couldn't get it, figure out how to get it back. And then finally I got it back. So at the beginning of this video I created, I was like, ah, I'm so excited. And it took out my, ah, you know what I mean? So it didn't capture all my emotion, my crazy bananas esprit emotion. So I think it's important that you don't take the term editor just on face value, and you understand that some people don't know how to story produce. Actually, most people don't know how to story production means you and I are having a conversation. We talk about this. And then at the end of the conversation, we get back to this, like, what is it? The rocket, what is it called? Rocket money. We get back rocket to the money, rocket yeah. money, right? If we get back to rocket money at the end, like in a story production, you should move that back to where we were talking about it in bulk, because that's where all that type of category of content makes sense. You move the conversation around so it sounds like it organically happened that way, but it's just more it's more valuable to the listener because you're cleaning it up for them. And you're like, one time there were these girls, they were really, really well known, but they were trying to transition out of what they were well known for on my podcast. And they were all working in tech, but they got well known for something else that was very popular. And they said, listen, Esprit, we really don't want to lead with that. We really want to lead with this stuff that we're trying to transition into. I'm like, cool, got it. Anyway, my editor edits it, and my editor has it with what they're popular for. I'm like, no. Like, they didn't want that. So then I edited it myself, restructured the entire thing. And so what they're popular for fell with a different energy space at a different portion of the podcast episode. And what they wanted to lead into was emphasized. So if someone wanted to hire them for the new stuff that they were doing, that would be really prominent at the beginning of the episode. So that's story production. Understand the point of the episode, and then telling the story to the point of the episode, making sure that everybody sounds great, that every word matters, that you cut out the stuff that is not of use. We just reproduced a live podcast we did. So we had a live audience at LA Tech Week. And I purposely told my editors, I was like, I do not want this to sound like a live panel. I want it to sound like a podcast episode. So anything that sounds like a live panel, cut, 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 cut. If somebody says, oh my God, there's Rob in the back, cut, 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 cut. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally.
So, and now, is that being nitpicky? Could be. It just depends on the story you want to tell. You know, for me, I didn't want to do a panel.
Like what you're talking about with that fidelity of editing, it's just a different kind of show. Like when you listen to something from NPR, for example, that has just gone through tons and tons of professional editors, producers.
Yeah.
I mean, when they read the credits afterwards, you're like, oh, it's a team of 18 people. That sounds easy, right?
Yeah.
And so what you're describing, if you laid out all the different parts of putting a show together, which there are so many little steps, we could spend hours just talking about all the little steps, right? What you just referenced seems to me to be the most laborious, arduous, difficult thing for sure.
Totally.
Like that sounds
brutal. Why I call it painting audio. And for me, painting audio isn't manipulating the way the media does nowadays. They manipulate to tell something that didn't really happen, and they cut together pieces to tell something entirely different. I simply move conversations around so it's a more fluid conversation, but the intent of what was said is still exactly the same as the guest and host intended it. So I don't change the meaning of what was said. I just move around the finesse of the flow. By the way, people are going to think I'm up to something shady because my fan is making my nose itch, so I keep doing this nose scratching. But it's hot as craze today.
It's a million degrees in LA, by the way.
And so this fan blowing in my anyway. No shenanigans over here.
So for context, like what you're talking about is exactly what NPR as a publisher would do with almost everything they put out, versus a Rogan who it's kind of what you hear is what you get. Like that's what happened. It was two dudes sitting down and like talking about UFOs for 6 hours, and it was just completely uncut, right?
Yeah. And you don't know, the best editors, and I got a lot of compliments in my editing that I'm really proud of. The best editors, you can't tell that there were any cuts. Like that's what makes a great editor, that you think that that's how the conversation actually happened. So I don't know how Joe Rogan produces or edits his podcast. I don't know if he has cuts. He may, and you just may not be able to tell. And I would imagine if he does have editing, it is a show where you wouldn't be able to tell because it's done really well. I got so
it's a million hours long.
Yeah,
that as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like huddled in that basement all day long.
Yeah.
Going on with conspiracy theories. Yeah. Yeah. It's a lengthy show. Tell me about your remote recording. You're a big fan of Squadcast, and you've been using that forever, right?
Yeah. Love Squadcast. I think they're incredible. They have a partnership with Dolby, so you have Dolby quality sound.
Cool.
Love it. I think right now for remote recording, there's Squadcast, Zencastr, Riverside. I think those are the main players, right? Am I missing? Zoom, I guess. Zoom is something that
people do still
on.
Use Zoom. It's wild, yeah.
And the reason why to use not Zoom, although I think Zoom has changed their settings since. Back in the day, the reason why not to use Zoom is it would only be a cloud recording. So if someone lost, actually this part is still true. If someone lost internet, you lose the interview, like it's
right,
just gone.
No buffering, no nothing. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's still the case. Now their sound quality, assuming you don't lose internet, I think that has improved over the years. But the beautiful thing about tools like Squadcast, Riverside, Zencastr, I could only speak intimately to Squadcast because I don't know the other two as well. But so I'll speak to the technology of Squadcast. Squadcast records behind the scenes. So let's say someone loses internet or you turn off your computer. This has happened to me. My computer has died or whatever. So you actually don't lose the interview because they have a backup system in place and they're buffering it. You also have higher quality audio, higher quality video than you would on a Zoom because the program is recording your local computer. It is not recording in the cloud. And so that's a really, really big deal when it comes to podcasting. And when you're creating an experience for your listener and they have their headphones on and it's really, really intimate, you want to have the best audio experience possible. Or you want to have such phenomenal content that it doesn't matter. Like you're just like tools, like tool recommendations, and you're vying for the next recommendation.
Right. Exactly.
You know, a show like that.
In my hiatus, when I came back and started using Riverside again, they had ridden the AI wave and there was just a ton of stuff that wasn't there a couple years ago. Have you seen the same thing with Squadcast? Have they started to pepper in a bunch of features that weren't there previously?
I do not know because I am not the one in there nowadays. It's my editor. So I just log in, do my interview, and then my team accesses everything.
And that's how you do it, folks.
So it is possible. I have not utilized the administrative features in quite a while.
Okay. Beehive. I've heard a bunch of people talk about Beehive lately.
Yeah. Love Beehive.
As far as it being top of its game for simplicity. Really, really easy to use. Tell me about how you use it.
I believe that Beehive is going to outperform MailChimp. I think it's a matter of time. It could be a year. It could be 6 months. It could be 5 years. I don't know, but I do think it's going to outperform MailChimp. Beehive has the most extraordinary team. They truly care about their customers. I think the most impressive thing about Beehive is their analytics. So let's say you're building up a newsletter and you promote it on LinkedIn, on Twitter, on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. You can see, this is so interesting to me. You can see with Beehive Analytics, if not only did someone subscribe to you from Twitter, from LinkedIn, et cetera, you can also see of the people that open your newsletter, where they subscribe to you from. So let's say you have 100 people subscribe to you on Twitter and you have 200 people who subscribe to you via LinkedIn. But then you see that on via Twitter, you get 95 opens, and via LinkedIn, you get 15 opens. So it doesn't even matter that you have 200 more people that subscribe to you on LinkedIn because your opens are coming from the source of Twitter. So it's fascinating to me that you could have that kind of intel to understand where is best to market your newsletter. They really they offer a lot of collaboration opportunities for your newsletter to grow, which is very exciting. So when someone subscribes to your newsletter, they may see other people's newsletters if you opt into that program and vice versa. So, and I just think they make newsletter growth really fun. I think Beehive has inspired the newsletter renaissance. I mean, newsletters are nothing new. When I first started, my first mentor was Corey Rudel, who's the godfather of email marketing. He passed away and he was like... He was so amazing and so integrity driven. He was so nothing like these like internet gurus that you see today. He was he's such a wonderful, wonderful human. And back then it was all about email marketing, and he taught us about email marketing. Like, email marketing is nothing new. And for ages it was like Constant Contact and AWeber and Infusionsoft. And I mean, the software keeps changing. And so it's not that newsletters are new, but I think it's the approach to newsletters. And I think that Beehive has really modernized the newsletter experience and created community around newsletter writing. And they celebrate your growth on their own socials. And there's just this like really cool energy when you're part of the Beehive community. And they have a newsletter cohort.
I think that's a good differentiation to mention too with email is you have email marketing, right? Cold outreach, cold emails, mass campaigns, drip campaigns, all this stuff. But then you have newsletters, and those are really, really different things with different outcomes that you're looking for.
Yeah.
And the whole idea with a newsletter for a lot of people is you find an interest that you're going to write about every day or every week or every month, whatever it's going to be. You grow that list. You start getting sponsors for that list. You now have advertisers in there. So this email becomes this revenue source, even though you're not technically selling anything. You're just selling ad space. It's just another part of the attention economy, right? Like that's, and that's what I've heard. They're really, really like, that's the track they picked, and they're really, really good at it as far as managing that.
Since we're talking about newsletters, I think, and since we're talking about podcasting, I think it's also important to talk about LinkedIn newsletter. And it's like, well, Esprit, if I create a Beehive newsletter, why would I also create a LinkedIn newsletter? Because I personally don't think it's one or the other. I think you should definitely have a Beehive newsletter. And what that means is you should definitely have a newsletter where you own your audience, where you have that direct relationship with emails. To date, LinkedIn doesn't give you email addresses. So it's just a LinkedIn audience plugging into your LinkedIn newsletter. However, people in the LinkedIn ecosystem, it's another touch point. And when you send that very, very, very first mailing on LinkedIn, it reaches your entire following and audience. And that doesn't apply to every single subsequent message that you send or issue that you send out. It's only on the very first one. And you could embed your podcast into a LinkedIn newsletter. So create a newsletter. Cool. You embed your podcast into the LinkedIn newsletter. And then you press send at the right time, knowing it's going to get the highest reach. And that's great. And then you just kind of create your newsletter whenever you want on LinkedIn. But I just think it's, why not? Look. Like with my We Are LaTeX Experience Club, I have so many people that are like, I've been following you for years, or I've been, you know, I keep hearing about you, or you're all over here. Like you do in this digital economy want to be in as many places as possible, as frustrating as that sounds. And it's always been frustrating. The good thing about that today is that we do have these AI tools to help empower us, even like we were talking earlier before about Canva. If we become masters at systems, like Eli is phenomenal at systems and how AI could support us in those administrative tasks, so that we are pressing publish in as many places as often as possible and finding what our clear messaging in, it's really important. Because when I was in earlier in my career, I remember the narrative used to be, have different types of content on every single platform so people know why they're going to that platform. I do not think that matters anymore. I think now, like my favorite musician, Ren, he posts something on LinkedIn. He posts that same, not LinkedIn. He doesn't use LinkedIn. He posts something on YouTube. He posts that same thing on his Facebook page. He posts that same thing on Instagram. Like the same. And do you think I care as a fan that I saw the same message three times? I'll probably end up liking it three times because I'm a fan of his, you know? So just create one piece of content. Iman Gaji, I always butcher his last name. He talks about having your leader. I mean, Gary Vee talks about this too. Having your leader content, creating that leader content, and then creating the micro content. And Iman's leader content used to be his newsletter. I don't know if it still is, but it was his newsletter. So he would create his leader content out of that, create other pieces of content. So it's not like you're rethinking up new ideas all the time. You're taking a core principle for the week and you're saying, okay, I'm posting. It could be like I write a LinkedIn post, and then that LinkedIn post becomes an Instagram reel, becomes a tweet, becomes a blog post, becomes a newsletter post. Just one like primary concept, and then repurpose that concept in multiple ways. And if you want to have ChatGPT help you, or whatever AI resource tool you want to use to help you repurpose that content, you could use a lot of people use Tweet Hunter to find out. There's a program I subscribe to called Creator Hooks, right? And so you could take a hook, place the hook in. So it's like, okay, your content's about flowers or whatever, when flowers bloom, whatever, right? And then you're like, okay, well, what's the best way to say this? So you get one of these hook formulas from Twitter, and then you paste in your concept just into this hook formula and put that as your tweet. Like, just try as many things possible and try to get it everywhere. Yeah.
Oh, there's so much.
So much. It's a lot.
How long has that LinkedIn email been around?
Like that?
The newsletter.
I don't know when it launched, but within a year.
Okay. Yeah. Because before we started recording, I was telling you how like my LinkedIn account is, it's like the car that I just left in my driveway for seven years. And now there's like, it's, you know, there's wheels missing and there's like raccoons living in there and stuff. Yeah. Like I go on my LinkedIn and it's just, it looks like a war zone. Like the number of developers from Belarus and India just like DMing me. I'm like, oh, I just can't even look at it. 100%. But I saw these like newsletter things popping up. I'm like, what? There's newsletters? Like people have newsletters on LinkedIn now?
I genuinely think LinkedIn is the new for the old, like meaning it's been around forever, but kind of like Tyler, the founder of Beehive, is bringing back newsletters and making them exciting. I feel like LinkedIn is bringing back content creation in that way. And especially as business professionals, I really think that's where we need to be. That's always where we needed to be, but they're really doing a push as like a content company, and it's exciting. And so especially if you already have content on Twitter that's been working, repurpose that content. Like put your tweets that have worked really well and have ChatGPT repurpose them into a LinkedIn post, you know, and then you do your little flair on it. Like just be on all the platforms. I still use Buffer to schedule stuff out. Like love Buffer.
Okay.
So like what I'll do is I have Buffer on my phone. I like the Buffer app. I have an idea for a tweet. and I'll put it into Buffer and then it will just get queued. And now I have months worth of content because, like, why am I going to post the tweet right away all the time? Like, I don't want. And then if I don't feel like being on social media, I'll pause my Buffer. Like, I'll just have my scheduling tools match whatever mood I'm in.
That's awesome. So yeah. It's not just going on autopilot regardless of how you're feeling about social.
No, I literally actively, like right now you won't see any tweets from me because I don't feel
interesting. Okay.
I don't feel like tweeting.
So it's
even
real.
Though I'm not writing the tweet.
Even
I am. I wrote it. I just wrote it 6 months ago or something.
You're just not pressing send.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. That's super interesting. So yeah, high part of my notes here is like get back onto LinkedIn and start taking it seriously. It sounds like there's just a million tools to utilize.
And you know, a core differentiator for all of us, when the computer came out and all of this stuff, snail mail became novel because no one was sending anyone a personal letter anymore. Now that AI writers are out there, the more human you are, is an advantage. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you how many people will send me AI messages that are very clearly AI messages. And I'll write back, an AI sent me this, didn't it? I don't appreciate an AI message and I'm not interested. And so if you do, like, that's why I don't use AI tools very often. I use them just for administrative purposes. I do not use AI tools for human connectivity. And even blog posts and stuff, unless there's like some really like non-essential reason I'm using, you know, ChatGPT to write for me or something, I really write things myself because I think you could see the soul in your written content. You could see the humanness. Now, will the AI writers get a ton better like 6 months out, a year out, 2 years? Sure. Of course, probably. But right now, be a human. Like,
I think that's super good. It's so funny because everybody in the world of AI talks about passing the Turing test, right? Like, can I not tell that I'm talking to a machine as opposed to a human? And maybe the first time you see something from GPT-4, you say, oh, wow, yeah, that really does sound like somebody wrote it.
Yeah.
But when it all starts to look like that, it would be like, oh, I guess maybe now it's not passing the Turing test because it's just... there's 1,000 people sending me the stuff that sounds like it came from the same person. So
totally.
Yeah. Now it's not so cool anymore. And you're right. It's probably all going to change in short order as well. So
yeah. I think it's going to get better and savvier. Here's my philosophy is being a human is going to be a core differentiator in how we operate as the AIs intensify. It is unreasonable what the digital ecosystem demands of us in this day and age. Back when Eli and I first started in technology, it was nothing compared to how it is today. So I think it would have been more respectable at that time to have different types of content on every platform and thoughtful content. Now that apps have really excelled in creating technology purposely for us to be addicted to it and not spend time with our families and not take care of our health. And now that they've enslaved us, technology and digital platforms, and society demands it of us in order to, you know, be relevant in our careers, I think now it's to our own health that we must put in systems and administrative processes into place in order to, you know, create the content we need to create and live, right? Because we're here to live. We're not here to post on a social platform. And I think it's unreasonable where these social platforms have taken us now with Threads, yet another one. You know what I mean?
Yep,
so
totally.
it's unreasonable. So I am okay with have heart behind your strategy. Do want to serve and give value. Don't be gross. You know what I mean?
Totally.
But it's unreasonable what they demand of us nowadays. It's not possible to live and to be on all the things. And to run a company, and to be there for our family,
agree.
And be a friend, and it's just unreasonable.
Yeah. I feel like there is a big division, especially when it comes to people who create content and consume content, right?
Yeah.
And that if you create content, you're probably not always, but probably more likely to be consuming less because you're spending your time creating.
Yeah.
And you may never even look at the comments you get, the like, it doesn't matter because you're creating. And people who are really, really just heads down on consuming, it does start to eat their life. That's all they do is consume, right? And then all of a sudden they're never creating or engaging in real conversations or anything else. So that's a whole other topic, isn't it?
It's we can go on for hours
about that one. I want to get into some hardware that you use. You have the Samsung GT Track, the G Track Pro.
Yeah.
I'm looking
at it right now. It's like right there. I have that one. I have the Shure MV. I think this is the MV7. I think you use the same one, right?
I've got the SMB something. I don't know. It's been a while.
Let's see. Yeah, MV7.
Okay. I think I have the SMB8.
So you have the fancy Joe Rogan one?
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah.
So I use this. I use so many different mics because it's just my art form. It's whatever I feel like that particular day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard over and over again that it's hard to beat the richness of the sound quality of the Shure mics.
I really do like the Audio-Technica 2100 is a great starter mic for podcasters, but I feel like the Shure's come down in price. You could even find it on eBay or OfferUp, that kind of Facebook marketplace.
Yeah, I think that when you start to really listen to the difference of recordings, there's that quality of warmth that comes through on some of them, where others just sound a little more empty and tinny. And I don't know, how much do people really care, except for the people making the recordings? They really care a lot, right?
We really care. We're such nerds about that stuff.
So as far as resources, you also have Jay Klaus. Is he a YouTuber? For podcast, does he put out content on YouTube?
Yeah,
for
Jay Klaus is Jay Klaus is he has something called Creator Science, a podcast called Creator Science, and he has something called The Lab, which is his program. So a lot of creators join that, so they're not alone, and it's a lot of business creators, so they could talk strategy together, talk about what's working, be really collaborative. Yeah,
that's cool. And then, so speaking of collaborative, you also have a note here for Intros AI for community. What is that all about?
Intros, speaking of AI, Intros automatically match makes your community. So if you're a podcaster and you want your listeners to connect with one another, they could sign up for Intro. You could have your Intros group. They sign up for your community, Intros AI, and then Intros will match make your listeners to one another.
Any
community for that matter. Yeah.
Like on calls or chats? Is it like Lunch Club? Do you know about Lunch Club?
Yeah, it's like Lunch Club.
Okay.
Yeah. But your own Lunch Club
is pretty wild.
Yeah, I used to use that a few years ago.
Like a white label lunch club, kind of.
It's a white label lunch club, yeah.
Wow, that is crazy. Okay. Oh, there's so much stuff here.
I thought you knew that existed.
I didn't know that existed. Oh. I was late on lunch club, too. But now I've already done like 100 of them already.
Yeah, I don't. I just don't want to meet any more people.
I'm really, really enjoying it. You know what
That's
I did? You'll appreciate this. I'll send this
You're
to you
like
later.
A massive
this is
extrovert.
So, this is so dorky. I'm not. I force myself into extroversion to connect with people, or else I would just like stay hiding behind my little box of pixels all day. That's what I would do. So what I did is I got so, you know, I have like just a super weird background, just super weird.
Yeah.
And I got tired of trying to explain how weird it was to see if there were little hooks that would be of interest to the person that I'm meeting for this like 40 minutes.
Yeah.
So I called it a me in three. I made like a little 3-minute video.
Oh, you told me about this. Yeah.
And then I just go through it in 3 minutes. And then there's always like this silence after, and people are like, where'd you get that? Like, who made that? I made it. I got tired of doing this over and over again. But it always leads to like a great conversation. And then I can spend the time hearing about what they do instead of explaining all the weird shit that I've done.
Love that. I watched it. You sent it to me. That's such a good idea. So nobody ever has felt put off by it?
Not at all. Not at all. Yeah. Yeah. Not at all. I know, because it is really weird, because it's real.
So it's you join the lunch club and right away... You're like, hold on 1 second, gonna play you a video.
I usually, I kind of have a format now. I'm like, oh, okay, so you're in Atlanta. How's that? Is it a million degrees? Just, you know, a couple things like that. And then, you know, I ask them about what they do and just, you know, I'm curious. And it eventually turns to, oh, so
what do you do?
Yeah. What are you working on? I'm like, here, let me share my screen.
Oh,
and then
stop.
I just go through the 3 minutes. Yeah. Yeah. And then, they're like, oh, wow, that's really weird. That's cool. Never seen anything like that before.
Stop. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's made it a better experience because when I get on there, like I just know what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
You know? And then I can just put all my attention on, oh, like, is there something I could do for this person or what could I learn about them? I don't know. It's my excuse to not leave the house continually because now I am technically meeting people and still not leaving the house.
So, no, that counts definitely as meeting people. That's why I am not on that site.
So I want to get to your experience club, the We Are LA Tech Experience Club, and just hear a little bit about that as well.
So nervous. I've been running the Experience Club, as you know, since 2015. I've produced, it's where LA startups get together. I've produced well over 400 experiences from skydiving, clay pigeon shooting, escape rooms, wine and paint nights, whiskey tastings. I mean, the list goes on. Willy Wonka, Wonderlands, like I creatively name Zen gatherings. I name all of them. And really proud. It's all LA people working in LA startups and tech companies. And I'm really nervous because I am raising my rates because I've always undercharged. And it was really interesting. A lot of my members have asked me to raise my rates. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, that's crazy. They're like, no, it's part of the filtering process to make sure there's the right type of people. And so I'm re-kicking off the club. Everybody wants to be a part of it. It's definitely like anybody who's not a part of it is just like out of their mind. It's just so good. It's so good. I'm not saying that from any kind of like salesy place even. Like, I've made my best friends from the club. People have raised money from the club. I ran into someone just the other day who was like, oh my God, remember so-and-so, like another club member. He was in the club. He was like, I'm like, of course I remember. He's like, he runs my company now. Like, thank you so much for connecting us. You know, like people have gotten married. They've had babies. Like,
no way.
Like, yeah, the club, like for me personally and for everyone else, has done these extraordinary life-propelling things. Like, so many of my legit best friends, like friends that, like when they come in town, they have to see me. Like, if I'm in trouble, I can totally call them. I met over the club. It's crazy. And
that is so,
so
cool.
So cool. So
and you said you're relaunching it? Is it going to have like a new brand footprint and everything
no,
else?
No, no, no. I'm relaunching it in the sense that like, when I stop the club each time, because it used to be a recurring subscription, and then of course in COVID it stopped, but I was already really burnt out, and then so that was fine. And then when I re-kicked it off, I did a series. I called it the Summer Series, and so it was a set of experiences in 5 weeks. I offered 5. I ended up doing 23 because I'm a mad person. And then I did the We Are LA Tech Welcome to LA Tech cohort. And that was supposed to be 2 activities in 1 week in 7 days. It was 7 or 8 in 7 days. I think one of the days I did 2. It's crazy. One of the cohort experiences was I did a tech tour. So I took these LA people working in LA tech in a stretch limousine to tech companies. I made them little picnic lunches in the bag. Like, you hadn't had one since you were a kid, right?
Of course you did.
And I wrote their name on the front. And it was so fun. And so they all had like their sandwiches and chips and cookies and all that kind of stuff. And I took them to Google and to Creator Now and the founder of Wondery and like to tour around. It was so cool. So And then I took him to Popple at the end, and Popple lives in this huge kind of like mansion like house. And so we popped the champagne to end the tech tour outside the patio at Popple's mansion. And it was like, it was really dope.
That's
I'm really proud
insane.
Of everything. So this is like, I consider myself to be an artist of human connection. And so for me, this is just creating my art. And the reason why I've always undercharged is because I have really self-limiting beliefs. So I've always been running this fine line of either being in the red or on the edge of the red. And like it's burned me out over and over. So what I'll do is I'll run the club and then I'll stop the club because I'm so burnt out. I can't even see straight. And then I'll be burnt out for months at a time, sometimes like years at a time. And then I'll reopen the club.
Understandably.
Yeah. I'll reopen because I'm doing almost all of this on myself. Yeah. I'll reopen the club and then do the thing and then I'll burn out again. Anyway, so now I've put in all these strategies into place to charge more. I spoke to my mentor. We worked out the number that I need for me to be okay to both energetically and financially behind the scenes. And then I put in these systems into place that I have yet to test so that I don't burn out, for people to support me in logistics. So I would use some of the money to help for a logistics person to support me, et cetera, et cetera. So I actually just sent out the payment link to some of the members. There's this whole process. The way you join the club is first you let me know that you're even interested, and then you apply, and there's an extremely small application fee to apply. It's $25. I just want to make sure none of the free pizza eaters are abusing my
totally.
Time. Then I have a culture fit call with a person, and then it's run across like a team of credible people in tech to decide who's the right culture fit. And then as long as they're the right culture fit, they get the payment link, and then they get access to all the experiences that I'm creating, and they don't have to pay anything extra to go to anything. So you get skydiving, hidden sushi gems, all these things, and no extra cost. I'm still charging too low, even at my higher price, but it's higher than I used to charge. So it's a step up.
Man.
But it's way lower
than any
in
the right direction, at least.
Yeah. And it's way lower than any of my competitors.
Way
yeah.
too many times.
Yeah.
Like way too many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm very excited. I can tell even by my talking that I'm very proud of my work and I love my work. And I really hope that I don't burn out, because it's like you said earlier, if you burn out, then there's no company that can be had. So I hope that everything I've put into place and charging them more. So I just sent out the payment. So pre-existing members, since they've already had the Culture Fit call, et cetera, they don't have to go through another Culture Fit call. So I just sent it out to two members like right before this interview. I was very nervous. They know I'm very nervous. And I said, you have to be like super candid with me on the feedback of your buying experience, because I'm going to learn from your buying experience to know what to apply to everybody else. So I have this focus group that I've been working with for a while, who's all pre-existing members. So like one person wanted in the club so bad. I just met him. He's like, wait, no, this sucks. This club needs to exist. He put $200 on the table. He's like, which is more than the membership was at the time. He's like, start the club. He's like, even this isn't enough. I was like, I don't even know like if I'm gonna start the club. He's like, just take the money. I want future buy-in. This is crazy. You know what I mean?
We've had so many conversations about this, and we're just gonna have to have another one after the show, because there is something like in front of you, like this cage you can't see, where you're thinking that something should be some price when it should be wildly more.
Wildly
for what you're giving.
More. Wildly
like wildly more.
More.
Yeah. So anyways, but I'm excited for you, because you seem super fired up about it, and that's what counts.
So far.
Like, that's what
so
counts.
If anybody wants to check out the club and join us, if you're in Los Angeles, it's wearelatech.club is where you can see pictures and information and,
awesome.
And get details on applying.
I'll put a link in the show notes for that too. And you said you might launch a private group for business podcasters, yet you already have a URL for it. So has
that's
Mike
so
become
funny.
You are or
no. So I've had my group of business podcasters for a while, like they've been students of my cohort and stuff like that, but it's not something I'm currently leaning into. Like there's no current ongoing thing, and I've paused it until like the club is running and smooth. But I think it'd be really cool for us business podcasters to have a group to all sync up together. So if people are interested in being a part of just a group of business podcasters and to learn about like how to grow our podcast or how to make revenue on our podcast or like customer conversions, client conversions, book sales, that kind of thing. I think, what is it? Getlisteners.com. If I remember.
Yeah. Getlisteners.com. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you could
sign up there. That's your URL. That's your domain.
Yeah.
That's a great domain.
Yeah.
Were you sitting on that for a long time? Like, or did,
podcasting like, in 2013,
sell
so.
Like a pile of gold to get it or
no,
that's a
no.
really,
like
really good
bucks.
Domain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess if you decide not to do it, you could always turn around and sell that domain
sell
a ton of money on
domain.
An auction. Yeah.
Yeah. And then yeah, also, yeah. Oh, getlisteners.com also goes to my Beehive newsletter, which has business podcasting tips as well.
That's awesome. And is the focus of that newsletter also to grow your audience?
To grow your audience, but specifically for business purposes. So there's so many different kinds of podcasts, from like storytelling podcasts to you know, documentary, all this stuff. My main jam is technical content about technology, the tech space, tech culture, startup culture, and business. So that's the whole ecosystem that I do my best to support.
That's so cool. And then, of course, We Are LA Tech is the flagship. That is where everybody should go listen.
Yeah. WeareLATech.com. And WomenInTechShow.com. I produce both.
Women in Tech Show. We're going to put all the links in for everybody.
WomenInTechShow.com. Yeah.
WomenInTechShow.com. We'll put all the links in there. Also, a link to Esprit's profile in the Vouch Vault app as well.
Yay.
And so you have to, we got to do this again because I feel like, well, first of all, it went, I don't know, 3 times longer than I expected, which, whatever.
Sorry.
It's awesome.
Sorry.
It's awesome. No, it's great. It's great.
Podcaster to podcaster.
So much for short form. Yeah. But also, you know, I mean, we didn't even touch upon, we had these long stretches of time where we would just like ping pong back and forth on productivity tools, like just on that. Right. Like we had, and it's something I'm sure to some extent we still obsess over and just how do we, you know, how do we use the tools to reclaim more of our time? So that could be a whole other thing of recommendations, I'm sure. But thank you so much, Esprit. It was so awesome.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
What's Good is brought to you by the Vouch app. What if your Instagram feed was filled only with the things that your friends loved so much they'd recommend them to you? That's Vouch. Discover the best products, podcasts, restaurants, recipes, books, services, and more with Vouch. Download it for free in the Apple App Store for iPhones or Google Play for Android. What's Good is also brought to you by Spark 6, a creative agency that designs and develops mobile apps, websites, and custom software for both startups and Fortune 500 companies. Music is by Connor Price. Find him on Spotify.
Yeah. Call my name, I'll be there any night and any day. Take my hand, I got you. That'll always stay the same. Less of my time spent with myself. I wouldn't trade it for anything else. You got my eyes, I got your back.